Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Wednesday, August 20th, 2014, episode 10.08, the NFC East Preview Show. With only 15 days until the start of the NFL season, I'll try to cover all four NFC divisions over the next 2 weeks. Today, I'll talk about the Dallas Cowboys, New York Giants, Philadelphia Eagles, and Washington Redskins. Dallas Cowboy cornerback Brandon Carr will join me later on in the show. I invite a rival to join me on Fans Take to cover the Washington Redskins. There are several good old boys to speak about, and Johnny Football has become Johnny Clipboard. Plus, the Cowboys are worth how much? Find out how much moolah Jerry Jones and the Cowboys are worth. There's lots to talk about, so let's chomp it in. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. All right, welcome back wherever you are in this great world of ours. Thank you for continuing to listen to the show. I really appreciate it. Let's get right to it. First of all, fantasy football, all the leagues are now sold out. I would like to thank everyone who came out and purchased a team. I really appreciate it. Let's have some fun this year. And don't worry, I won't beat all of you, just some of you. For all of the show donors out there that continue to donate to the show, I appreciate you. Thank you very much. Just want to tell you, good friend of the show, James Reese, has once again come through for me, and he's put out an awesome NFL prediction spreadsheet. If you've donated to the show before, you know the spreadsheet. It is really cool. It's got the entire season laid out. You just pick the winners, and at the end, it's got all the calculations, all the playoff teams. It's awesome spreadsheet. If you've not seen it before and you want it, head out to www.nflrnr.com. Not too late to become a show donor. Just hit the support the show button up there on the left-hand corner, and you'll get an email on how and where to download the show spreadsheet, the NFL Rants and Raves 2014-15 NFL Prediction Spreadsheet. It's really cool. Show donors, check your email boxes. And if you have not received an email yet, please hit me up at steven@rarn.net, and I'll make sure that you get the information to download that spreadsheet. It's really cool. Also, if you're not following along on the website, nflrnr.com, you're missing out because there's a lot of stuff that I've been posting on there daily, my take on some of the news of the NFL that I don't always get to talk about here on the show. So if you always want to hear what I have to say or some of the nasty comments I have to say about some of the things going on in the biggest NFL news that I don't necessarily talk about on this show, make sure you go out to nflrnr.com. And if you're not following me on Twitter and Facebook, make sure you do that as well. Go to nflrnr.com. Up at the top, all of our Twitter handles are there. Check them out so you can see what's going on with the rest of the NFL that I don't particularly talk about here. Going to have to start with what is the biggest news right now? The Cleveland Browns. That's right, and the naming of a starting quarterback. So, head coach Mike Pettine has named quarterback, wait for it, Brian Hoyer as the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns in week one. He said, and I quote, "He was the clear leader from the beginning. We've maintained all along that if it was close, I would prefer to go with the more experienced player." Very nice, coach. I like that. Except by experienced player, do you mean a guy who's been in the league so long that he's only started six games? That guy? Yeah, that's a lot of experience there, coach. You didn't look that experienced Monday night against the Washington Redskins, but it's your decision. Here you go. I've been on board with this all along. I'll just repeat it for you all once again. Here's what I believe happened. At this point, he needed to name a starter. They're going into week three of the preseason. That's the game that you kind of use as a preview of what's coming up this season. Your starters play probably the whole half, first half. They come out sometimes even after halftime, play a little bit in the third quarter so they can get that feel of a game. And he needs to know who his starter is now. Clearly it's not Johnny Manziel because they're not. He didn't really show much more than Brian Hoyer did. And as Pettine said, he wants to go with the experienced player. So he's going to go with Hoyer now. And the way I see it is he is doing Johnny Manziel a favor. This actually helps Manziel and not go against him, because what he's doing is they're saying, look, learn the book, get better, get more focused. And what will happen is hopefully later on down the line this season, I will have you come and be the starter. He knows that he can't go week one into Pittsburgh against the Pittsburgh Steelers and have Johnny Manziel be the starter, and then that implodes on him, and then he benches him in favor of Brian Hoyer. He doesn't want to do that because you would completely kill Johnny Manziel if that's what you did. So he's going to go first 3 weeks of the season. They have a bye week four, so you play them at Pittsburgh, and then you play Hoyer at home against the Saints and the Ravens. Look, those are three formidable football teams. I expect the Browns to lose all three of those games and start the season 0-3. At that point, you go into your bye week and you say, okay, Johnny, I think it's your turn now. You bring and you give him the football team and you let him roll for the rest of the 13 games and see how it goes from there. But you can't start him and then bench him and bring him back later. That you can't do. So I think he made the right decision. You're going with Brian Hoyer. Brian, you got 3 weeks to face two division rivals that are pretty tough and a pretty tough opponent in the New Orleans Saints. If you win some of those games, you come out 2-1, maybe even 3-0. Heck, you are our guy, Brian Hoyer. We're going to roll with you the rest of the season. But if you falter and you're 1-2, 0-3 at the end of those three games, we're going to go to our bye week and we're going to bring in Johnny Manziel. That's the way I see it. That's probably what I would have done just to kind of booster the confidence of the kid. You don't want to throw him against the ravenous defense of the Pittsburgh Steelers on the road to start the season. You wait till week five. You come out of your bye. You go and you play the Tennessee Titans. It's a much better showing for Johnny Manziel, and I think that's what the Cleveland Browns are going to do. Nothing against Brian Hoyer. I just think he's a journeyman. This is his third football team, and it's time for he just did not show me enough to say I am that much better than Johnny Manziel, especially for a guy who, as Pettin said, he's an experienced player. He's been around the league. So that's why I think the Cleveland Browns made that decision. Hear me now, believe me later, Johnny Manziel will be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns starting week five this season. Let's move on. Oh, we haven't had this in a while, folks.
Just a good old boy. Never meaning
you
no
know,
harm.
He never meant any harm.
Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day he was born.
Oh, a couple of Pittsburgh Steelers have been arrested. This just happened recently. Running backs Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount were arrested following a traffic stop in Ross Township. They were pulled over in a Camaro that was being driven by Le'Veon Bell, because apparently the traffic officer said he could smell a strong odor of marijuana coming from the vehicle. So he stopped them, pulled them over, searched the car, and they found a 20-gram bag of pot. And police said that Bell, Blount, and a female passenger that was in the car with them claimed ownership of the marijuana. So not only were they hitting the doobie, they were quick to say, it is my doobie. So Bell and Blount and the female were arrested. They were later released. But to make matters worse, it looks like Bell's going to be charged with a DUI because he was driving under the influence of marijuana. And he will most likely face a suspension. So hello, Dre Archer, the rookie running back that was taken in the third round by the Pittsburgh Steelers. All of a sudden, his fantasy stock has skyrocketed because he's looked pretty good in the preseason. And now, I don't know if Blount gets a suspension. I'm pretty sure Bell's going to get suspended. I don't know for how long. Obviously, it's got to go through the legal process, and the NFL will chime in here shortly. The Pittsburgh Steelers aren't commenting yet as of this moment. But to have the two dogs. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers were going back to the ground and pound. We're going to pound you over the ground. And these guys were going to be the workhorses. Bell and Blunt, they were going to be the guys that came at you with this two-headed monster. And now all of that is kind of put on hold. So the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to either, A, rely on Archer a lot to pick up the slack, or you might see the Steelers hit the open market and see which veteran running backs are out there, possibly even maybe trade for a running back. So that's bad news for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Not good at all. That not only one, but two of your top running backs, they're together, and they're doing it together. It's just, it's crazy. But there you go. That's what happens when the league says it's bad to do something that is legal in some states here in this country. But the league said, even though it's legal in you know, Colorado, Denver Broncos, even though it's legal in Washington State, Seattle Seahawks, it's not allowed in the NFL. So you have to be careful. The rules are rules, and you just got to go ahead and follow the rules. I can't believe two running backs, especially two guys that are starters, would get busted for pot. But since we're on the pot subject, let's do one more good old boy.
Just a good old boy.
Ah, the Washington Redskins.
Never meaning no harm.
Since we're talking about the NFC East.
Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day he was born.
Cornerback Bashaun Breeland. Well, I'll talk about this later on with Ed Franks, the representative during Fans Take of the Washington Redskins. He was cited for possession of marijuana as well. This guy's a rookie, okay? You're a rookie in the National Football League. You're just going through training camp. You know, you're going, it's going pretty good. You have a strong showing in camp. It looks like you're obviously going to make this team, and you could possibly be counted upon to help this team. And on August 11th, got cited because he was partying at the campus of Virginia Commonwealth University, and he took a little too much of the marijuana doobie smokage, and he got busted. No information is available right now, and the Washington Redskins and Breeland all have declined comment. This was a fourth-round pick for the Redskins, and he, you know, you just can't come into the league. I just remember my first year on a job, any job that I've had in my life, I am like nose clean. I don't do anything. I show up on time. I show up early, as a matter of fact. I leave after I'm supposed to leave. I make sure that all my T's are crossed and all my I's are dotted. I go above and beyond. I just want to keep myself clean because after the first year, it's a lot more difficult for someone to fire you after you've been with the company for a year. And so you want to make sure that you don't do any bad stuff during that first year. And so I expect and I believe that just about anybody else in this country is the exact same way. You're going to work hard. You're going to do your job. You're going to try and not get busted for anything. Here's a rookie who got drafted in the fourth round, mind you. It's not like he's a top draft choice. He was a fourth round pick. And you go out and you get busted for smoking pot. Ay, caramba. There you go. Three good old boys all arrested within the last 11 days simply because they couldn't stay away from the doobie. It's a big old Bahamian joint, doobie. So I don't know if it was a Bahamian joint. I'm just messing up there. That was an Eddie Murphy line. But I'm just shaking my head. I'm sitting here looking at this, shaking my head. Three guys, all who were going to be significant players for their football teams, all getting busted for marijuana. Not a good sign for the NFL right now. All right, quarterback for the Washington Redskins, RG3. This is the NFC East show. We're just staying on with the NFC East. He has apparently had enough of everybody saying that he does not know how to slide. And so he has come out and promised that he will get better at sliding. That's right. Robert Griffin III, quarterback for the Washington Redskins, tweeted, "Just want you all to know I will keep working on getting down and not taking those big hits. Got it right the third time." Yeah, it still didn't look good, RG3. I mean, you think you might have got it right that third time. It still didn't look like a legitimate slide. How difficult is it? And I was watching the game on Monday night, and I tweeted out, how difficult is it to slide? I mean, you learn sliding. I mean, any kid in America who plays Little League learns how to slide in like when you're like 12. So I can't believe RG3, who's that gifted an athlete, does not know how to slide. He tweaked his leg. I think by sliding incorrectly. So RG3 says he's going to keep getting better at it. I hope he does, because I want to see RG3 improve, not to the guy he was in 2012 when he had that fabulous rookie season, because I don't want him running around. I want him to improve to be the better pocket passer that I know he can be, because he's got a pretty phenomenal arm, but he's just not getting it right. And he starts running around again, he is eventually going to get hurt again. So I don't want you to learn how to slide now. Now I just want you to learn to stay in the pocket and make your reads, go through your progressions, and make a good pass when you need to. Let's see if he can do that. But he says he's going to be fine. All right, sticking with news in the NFC East, the Dallas Cowboys. It's not breaking news. They were already on top of the NFL as far as value. But they have become the first American-owned sports franchise to top $3 billion. That's billion with a B. $3 billion. According to Forbes, the most valuable team in the NFL and in America is the Dallas Cowboys. They're worth $3.2 billion. They are the second most valuable team in all of sports. The only team that is above them is Real Madrid. They're valued at $3.4 billion. That's the proper football team from Spain, Real Madrid, $3.4 billion. Right after that, $3.2 billion, the Dallas Cowboys. Dude, $3.2. Okay, so like the Clippers were just bought for, what, $2 billion, right? The Los Angeles Clippers, it's Los Angeles. It's a huge market. NBA, right, it's big. $2 billion. If the Cowboys were to hit the market right now, They would probably be worth $5 billion. That is no joke. If Forbes is putting their value at $3.2 billion, Jerry Jones could probably sell his team right now and ask for $5 billion, and he would get it. He would get it. That is bank, dogs. $3.2 billion. Here is the rest of the top five NFL teams. Followed behind the Cowboys, who, remember, the Cowboys are at $3.2 billion. The New England Patriots came in second. They're valued at $2.6 billion. The Washington Redskins, another NFC East team, are third, valued at $2.4 billion. The New York Giants, a third NFC East team, valued at $2.1 billion, came in fourth. And rounding out the top five, $1.85 billion, the Houston Texans. Those were all billions with B's, folks. Cowboys, Patriots, Redskins, Giants, and the Houston Texans. That is the top five. The bottom five, wow, the Rams are only worth $930 billion. They're dead last. It's $930 billion. So, million. I'm sorry, not billion. Million. $930 million, that's still a lot of money, but it's not in the billions. And the Buffalo Bills are at $935 million. They're at 31. They're the 31st team on the list. And I think the Bills right now, I think the offer that's in to purchase the Bills is right at $1 billion. So it's, like I said, it's valued more than what Forbes is putting the football team at. I just thought it was interesting that in the top five, you have three of the four teams in the NFC East that we're talking about, and you just go two more spaces at seventh, you have the Philadelphia Eagles there. So definitely within the top seven, you have all four teams in the NFC East. That just shows you the popularity of this division. And although it has not been great as far as winning games lately. It shows you just how popular this division is. So before I take a look at the four teams in the NFC East, let's bring in a player from the Dallas Cowboys. All right, joining me right now from the Dallas Cowboys, cornerback Brandon Carr. Brandon, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good, doing pretty good. Are you feeling a little bit better now that training camp's over? You don't have to go through all the rigmarole of that?
We're still in training camp mode, just minus the fact that we're away from home. We're in home now, but it's still a grind, and we're still in that training camp mode.
All right, so there's a lot of press right now surrounding the Dallas Cowboys defense. How are you and your teammates trying to avoid all that noise and all that negativity that's coming from the media?
We don't hear it. We have one mission right now, and that's to be the best defense that we can possibly be. And you know, right now we're just in the process of establishing our own identity, trying to figure out who we want to be as a football team, who we want to be as a defense, and each and every day being consistent and going out there and showing that.
All right, Brandon, I see that you're from Flint, Michigan, and you attended Carmen Ainsworth High School.
That's correct.
Do you know what other former NFL player attended that school?
You said what?
What other former NFL player attended your high school?
John Runyon.
That's right, big John Runyon. He spent the majority of his years in 13 seasons with the Philadelphia Eagles. That's a rival. You call him up and you give him a hard time about that?
No, not really. I think John and I, when I first got into the league, I think he's kind of on his way out.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a chance to really get into the rivalry and kind of give him some grief every time I see him.
That's good. Well, do you know he's a member of the U.S. House of Representatives now?
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Doing big things, man.
you plan on going into politics when you're done with the NFL?
I try to stay as far away from politics as I can. that's not my forte.
Well, that's probably a good thing. All right, getting back to the league, right now the NFL has placed an emphasis on defensive holding, illegal contact, and illegal use of hands. What do you have to do as a cornerback to play your style of football but still play within the rules?
First and foremost, you have to adapt. This league is ever-changing. You know, big emphasis on defensive penalties, trying to, you know, just create more scores and more excitement for the offense. Of course, we understand that, but at the same time, you know, that's why we play the game for the challenge of going out there and, you know, the rules are being set, but at the same time, that's the challenge that you have to go out there and overcome those rules and still make plays. So, you know, it's going to be challenging for it, but at the same time, you know, you have to adapt and kind of tailor your game to the new rules and the new changes that's taking place right now.
Do you feel that there's possibly too much of an advantage towards the wide receiver right now in the league?
You said, do I feel that way?
Yeah.
Of course, we all know it's that way, but at the same time, I love my position. You know, I accepted the challenge in 2008 when I was drafted, and, you know, each and every year I prepare myself. You know, I have that in the back of my mind that, you know, we know that the rules are tailored for offense, but at the same time, you know, that's what makes this game that much more rewarding for us on defense and make our plays.
But it would be better if the league came out one year and said, we're going to place an emphasis on wide receivers pushing off and using their hands on quarterbacks.
Then nobody will watch the game. So it'll be flags the whole game. It'll be 6 hours long.
All right. So, Brandon, the reason we're talking to you right now, talking to Brandon Carr, cornerback of the Dallas Cowboys. This year the Cowboys come overseas to London to play in Wembley Stadium against the Jacksonville Jaguars. How do you feel about making that trip overseas to play the game?
Well, I made my trip for the first time when we came over for the media blitz. A few months prior to today. And, you know, the trip is just a long trip, but at the same time, you know, it's a lot to learn. It's a great learning experience. You know, your culture shock, but at the same time, you get to embrace a whole new culture and a whole new environment.
Do you see anything happening with that game being, you know, that it's outside? It's supposed to be kind of a road game, but right now the sense I'm getting is there might be more Cowboy fans than Jaguar fans in the stadium.
That'd be great. You know, the Cowboys fans, they travel well. Every stadium that we go to, and, you know, I know they have a pretty solid fan base in the UK, and, you know, we're just looking forward to that game. And, you know, just looking forward to all the excitement that surrounds that event.
All right, so you were over in London for the media blitz. Is there anything that you saw in London or anything you want to see when you get back to London this year?
I guess if I have some time, you know, I may take one of the big bus tours or have a black car, somebody take me around so I can just see a lot of the historic sites and things of that nature. When I came the first time, I was, you know, trying to get caught up on my sleep schedule and try to get a little shopping before I got back home, got back to training camp.
Well, speaking of sleep, you want to make sure, you need to talk to the coaches in the front office. You want to make sure you come earlier in the week so you could get acclimated to the time change before you play the football game on Sunday.
Oh, no doubt. I think they're going to do a good job as far as getting us there ahead of schedule so we can get comfortable, get our bodies ready, you know, go out there and perform on Sunday, because although it is a unique experience and you know, a blessed opportunity. At the same time, it's that good to take care of and win a football game.
Brandon, you created the Carr Cares Foundation. You want to talk to us about that real quick?
Yes, this is inspired by both my parents. My mom, a school teacher. My father is my basketball coach. Growing up and just see the impact they had in different environments. You know, it just kind of was just instilled in me as a kid just to give back when I had my opportunity in Carr Cares. It's my perfect opportunity to give back to the youth, something I feel have a strong passion for, just being around kids and, you know, educational enrichment and physical fitness, just to try to, you know, tailor and encompass a full 360, well put together human being, you know, to be a productive citizen for our communities in the future.
And that website is www.carcares.org. That's CARRCARES.org.
Correct.
Yeah, now we can have folks come out and take a look at that and hopefully donate to a very good cause. And hopefully we can get maybe the officials to start looking at wide receivers instead of cornerbacks next year.
Oh, man, don't hold your breath, but I appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much, Brandon. That was Brandon Carr, cornerback of the Dallas Cowboys. Here's my assessment of Dallas. I know they've been 8-8, and that's kind of been their mantra recently. But I think they have a great offensive unit. This offensive line looks fantastic right now. I expect DeMarco Murray, the running back, to have a great, great season, as well as Lance Dunbar, who's going to kind of back him up and get some carries as well, with Terrence Williams and his emergence, Cole Beasley, Dwayne Harris, and, of course, Dez Bryant at the wide receiver position. I like this new kid, Devin Street. Obviously, Jason Witten, still one of the top tight ends. And the emergence of Gavin Escobar, the other tight end. The Cowboys are going to use a lot of two tight end sets. He is catching the ball just brilliantly. Offensively, they will be able to hang with just about anyone. Here's the bad thing about the Dallas Cowboys. It's their defense, but you can't really say bad. I think the word for the defense of the Dallas Cowboys right now is unknown. They have a lot of unknowns on the defensive side of the ball. Outside of the big name of Brandon Carr, who thankfully Brandon was able to join me today, you got Maurice Claiborne, who's going into his third year. Hopefully he stays healthy this season. Maybe you have you know, some other guys step up. They brought in Rolando McClain. It's a guy who apparently nobody else wanted him. He came to Dallas and he is looking really good. If some of these guys step up and really play some solid football and buy into Rod Marinelli's defensive schemes, who knows what the Dallas Cowboys defense could be? Nobody knows, because nobody's seen these guys play. They're a bunch of no names. So can you say their defense is bad because they don't have a lot of big names? Sure, but that's not really the case. They may not be bad at all. They're a work in progress because they have many unknowns, and that's what we're going to have to find out about the Dallas Cowboys. I do believe on paper and looking at their schedule, they are much better than the 8-8 they've been over the last few seasons. They have to prove me right, though. They have to prove me right. They're going to have, as Brandon said, they got to have to prepare and focus and go show it on the field. That defense is going to have to stop some teams. If Tony Romo and the Dallas offense goes as I expect it to go, they will be in the top five again in points scored and offensive yards gained. I think they can do that again. The defense has to be better than dead last. And if they're better than dead last, if they're in the mid to upper 20s defensively, the Dallas Cowboys will be just fine. And that's what I think about that. Now it's time for me to look at the New York Giants. The New York Football Giants. All right. You know what? Tom Coughlin is the head coach, and there's no way that he's going to allow the Giants to be as bad as they've been offensively. I know it's the preseason, and everybody's, what's up with Eli Manning? What's up with the offense? I think they're going to be okay. I would be, what's up with the defense? The Giants have to overcome their defense as well. Last year, they gave up a lot of points, but offensively, look, Manning is struggling, and it's this new West Coast offense that they're putting in for him. It's not so much that it's a new offense. It's just, where are the players around him? You know, Nix is gone. He's no longer with the team. So you're going to have to rely on Victor Cruz and other guys that you're just not that familiar with. Running back, they took a blow by David Wilson having to retire from the NFL. It's sad, but now where do they go? Now Rashad Jennings is probably going to be the primary running back there in New York. Is he going to be a guy who can, you know, run the football 300 times this season? I'm not sure that's going to be good for the New York Giants offensively. Besides Victor Cruz at wide receiver, I know they do have the rookie Odell Beckham Jr. And although I like the kid, I'm not sure he's going to be able to come in and be a force to be reckoned with immediately. Reuben Randall right now is listed on their depth chart as the second wide receiver. Randall and Cruz and Beckham, a rookie. That's what the Giants are going to be relying with on the offensive side of the ball. Now, Adrian Robinson, the tight end, is he going to pan out there in New York? There's a lot of questions on offense, but I would still look at the defensive side of the ball, and outside of Jason Pierre-Paul and Mathias Kiwanuka, is that line going to hold? Cullen Jenkins, I have some questions with. Jonathan Hankins. And then you got to look, you know, Prince Amukamara and Dominic Rogers-Cromartie at the corners. Are those guys going to stay healthy? They've had some injury issues in the past. And even when they're on the football field, they get beat sometimes. So the New York Giants have questions on both sides of the ball. You look at the Dallas Cowboys and you say, yeah, their offense is okay. They have questions on defense. Well, you look at the Giants and you're like, well, we've got questions on both the offense and the defense. So it's going to be interesting to say. I guess you got to say first that they have to stay healthy. Because, on the offensive line, protecting Eli Manning has got to be the top priority. If Manning goes down, forget it. I mean, I guess you could say that pretty much of any football team. If starting quarterback goes down, you know what, you're going to have some problems. There might be an exception or two. There might be a couple teams who, if their starting quarterback goes down, the backup's going to come in and work just fine. I'm not sure the New York Giants is that team. But I'm going to be interested to see how the safeties of Quentin Demps and Stevie Brown do. And you got to keep an eye on Amukamara and Dominic Rogers-Cromartie and see how those corners adjust. They're going to be playing some pretty bad wide receivers. They got Dez Bryant they got to cover for the Redskins. They got, Garcon and DeSean Jackson's not there, now there. And then for the Philadelphia Eagles, Jeremy Maclin, Riley Cooper. There's a lot of good wide receivers in this division, and Amukamara and Rogers-Cromartie are going to have to man up and step up and guard those guys. It's going to be interesting to see if the New York Giants can hold up within the division, because they didn't do so well in division games last year. There were 7-9. I actually think the New York Giants are worse. Not that much worse, but I don't see them winning more than 7 games. In the realm of possibilities, I don't see them losing more than 10 games. So 7-9, 6-10 maybe. 6-10 might be where the New York Giants are. I would be shocked if I saw the New York Giants be higher than that. So it's going to be interesting to watch that season. I was going to have a gentleman join me on Fans Take today to kind of talk Giants football with. but we just couldn't coordinate times, and my schedule kind of got a little crazy with work. So, John, if you're listening, I apologize. I know you wanted to come on. You had some things you wanted to say. Let's make sure that we mesh up and get our signals in order so that we can get you next time when we talk about the New York Giants. The Philadelphia Eagles. Ah, yes, the hated Philadelphia Eagles. Buddy Derek Hallen was going to be joining me to talk Eagles, but obviously we couldn't coordinate times. He's in the UK. And why are my friends all fans of teams from the NFC East other than the Cowboys? I don't know how that happened. But anyways, Derek, sorry we couldn't get you on. This I'll say of the Philadelphia Eagles. Everybody right now says it is the NFC East is there for the Eagles to take. Last year they were 10-6. They won the division. But they struggled early on. I mean, they struggled. They had that first game last season, came right out of the bat, and boom! It was like, yeah, baby, did you see the Eagles' offense? They destroyed the Redskins. And then they struggled for a few games. Andy Reid came in to, you know, they beat the Eagles, beat his old team there with the Kansas City Chiefs, and they sputtered. And then they kind of finished the season strong. They were able to win the division by beating the Cowboys in that final game. And everyone is hailing Nick Foles as the guy. And he is, and that, I guess, is going to be the question for Chip Kelly and the Philadelphia Eagles. What does Nick Foles do this year that he didn't do last year? I mean, he threw 27 touchdowns last year, and he only threw 2 interceptions. Only 2. And that's really good. But I've always been a big proponent of saying that if teams don't have film on you, it's going to take them a little bit of time to understand what your tendencies are and what your strengths and what your weaknesses are. So now every team has, especially every team in the division, has tape of 16 games of Foles. It's going to be interesting to see how that transforms. Is he going to be able to continue from that form from last year? Is he going to be able to protect the football? I mean, he only threw 2 picks last year. That's great, but he did take some sacks. So it's going to be very interesting to see if Nick Foles can step it up and be the guy that Chip Kelly needs to run his offense. Speaking of Chip Kelly, it's only his second season, so we're going to find out, is he the real deal? Is Chip Kelly's offense for real? Was it just a fad last year and people just didn't know how to handle it? Or is he going to come back this year with a stronger, faster, more potent offense that teams aren't going to be able to deal with? That is going to be a question. I think Kelly is the real deal. He is a great coach. I liked him at Oregon. I was not happy when he went to the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm sure you know why. But is this the year where Chip Kelly decides that he's going to open up his playbook and you know, kind of bring in more things? Or is he just going to let LeSean McCoy and Darren Sproles, who they brought in from New Orleans, kind of do their things? The other thing is Zach Ertz, the tight end. Is he finally going to be the guy? Is he going to take over the torch from Brent Celek? Or are they still going to have to rely on Brent Celek? And then at the wide receiving court, hey, they lost DeSean Jackson. And as much as, you know, I am not a big fan of that guy, he was a big part of their offense. So who's the wide receiver that's going to fill in for him? Obviously, Jeremy Maclin is back from an injury, but is he healthy? Is he going to regain his form from a season ago? Those are the questions that the Philadelphia Eagles have to ask themselves. I still think what's going to bring the Eagles down is their defense. And I could say that about all 4 of those teams in this division. What's going to bring these teams down is the defense. I could say that for all 4 of the teams in the NFC East. So that means the offenses are going to have to be somewhat potent. They're going to have to put up points. Good for fantasy players, not so good for head coaches and offensive coordinators, because you know you're going to have to score points if your defense can't really stop anybody. So that's where the Philadelphia Eagles are. Just the other night, I know it's a preseason game, but they looked awful. And I mean awful against the New England Patriots. The New England Patriots went up and down the field against Philadelphia. And once again, I'll preface it with, yeah, it's just a preseason game, but they scored 42 points on the Eagles. And 21 of those points were in the first half when you saw a lot of starters out there. So that doesn't bode well for a team that already was struggling defensively. You can't be that good offensively and keep putting your defense out on the field that quickly. You're going to have to – the Eagles are going to have to find a way to keep other teams' offenses off the field. And that means that maybe Chip Kelly has to slow down his offense a little bit. They were 10-6 last year. I think that they've actually come back down. I think they won 10 games last year because they won a couple games that they probably shouldn't have won. So I don't put 9-7, 10-6 back up on the board for the Philadelphia Eagles. And we'll see how they do within the division, because last year they struggled within the division early on. So if they can play up to the NFC East and win some of the games that they lost last year, then the Philadelphia Eagles are going to be okay. But once again, it all stems on how their defense plays and how they work that out. And finally, the Washington Redskins. All right, joining me right now, representing the Washington Redskins, Ed Franks. How you doing, Ed?
I'm doing well. How are you, Steve?
Doing pretty good. Cannot complain. Working way too hard, but I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
Well, listen, I just would like to tell you, in the spirit of all true great sports talk media, I'd just like to tell you I'm a longtime listener. This is my first time calling in.
Thank you. First time caller. I like that. I like that a lot. So we're talking about the Washington Redskins as I continue to cover here the NFC East, the final team here that we're talking about. That's your team. How long have you been following the Redskins?
This is going to make me sound like a homer or like a bandwagon guy. It just so happens that in my aging chronology, I happened to come of age liking the sport around the time they were becoming good. So 1981, around the time Joe Gibbs took over for the first time, I was about 11.
The Hoggets.
That was about the time I started to get into football, and it just so happened that was 2 years later they were in the Super Bowl, and they were fortunate enough to win 3 Super Bowls in a 10-year period, and it's been a bit of a dry spell since then.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you're talking about the Riggins era, right? Riggins. And...
Yes, Riggins, and running. It was in Pasadena, not far from where you are.
Yep.
He broke through that Miami line, scored that touchdown, and we were off and running there in Super Bowl 17.
The Hogs and the Hoggettes there.
Exactly. Up until recently, some folks still went to the games dressed like that. I'm not sure if they still do anymore, but there's still a few folks that'll put on the garb.
I was at a Dallas Washington game in Dallas not too long ago, and yeah. They were showed up there dressed as Hoggettes.
Okay.
So yeah, they still do it. They still do it.
Still going strong.
Well, let's take a look at the team. Obviously, last night's preseason game between the Cleveland Browns, and if you watch normal media, all you really heard about was Johnny Manziel, and I was like, hello. What about RG3? There's another guy over there on the other side that we want to see if he's healthy now. So what do you think? Is he healthy enough to take that next step in his progression?
Before I get into my answer, if you delve closer into the national media, you heard mostly about Johnny Manziel's middle finger. he apparently was caught on camera making an obscene gesture at the Redskin bench, and that seemed to dominate the entire the entire discussion today. In fact, it seems like the Browns coach even held off on naming a starter. He said he was going to do it today, and he didn't do it. So
that's all anybody wanted to talk about. And I just said, I felt like Ocho Cinco say, child, please. It's a bird. Everybody was acting like they've never flipped a bird off in their life. Come on.
Well, I know. I've heard your rants on the media and how they handle Johnny Manziel. So this might just be another fueling of the flames, as it were. But, you know, he played significant minutes in the game. He let him on a drive for a touchdown, but that seemed to be the prevailing story. But I guess when you've dominated the news cycle like he has, he's going to be a lightning rod for attention.
Yeah, and the thing is that they seem to want to focus on the negative, not the positive. Which I don't know. I've never had that happen to me, but I would think that that's at some point got to weigh you down, that every story seems to be about something negative. It's not about anything positive the kid's doing.
This is true. But to get back to your question, you know, you and I were exchanging some tweets last night, and he still needs to learn to protect himself, RG3. He takes a lot of hits he doesn't probably need to take. He struggles. He doesn't know how to slide. I mean, and that's something that, you know, was evident when he came out of college in his first year. He obviously injured his knee as a result of not being able to get out of harm's way late in his rookie season. So there was no prospect of him being able to learn to slide while he was recouping. I was kind of hoping maybe this year in training camp they'd bring in a baseball guy and just teach him how to slide. I mean, I'm not making a joke. Maybe get a slip and slide out in practice and just teach him how to slide.
Hey, yesterday.
It's very awkward when he slides.
Yesterday while I was watching the game and I was tweeting, I tweeted to RG3's Twitter handle and I was like, dog, call me. I will teach you how to slide, bro. Give me a call. So I'm ready to sign up to teach him how to slide if he needs that.
He's not wearing the brace, so that's a good sign. I think, I think really last year he rushed himself back. You know, it's probably a whole other topic to get into last year, but he rushed himself back. I would have liked to have seen some of the adults in the room make the decisions about when he would be ready to play, and I don't know if it was part of his media campaign or his marketing deal, but, I mean, I feel like he should be healthy, and I think more what we may see with him hesitating is just they're putting in a new system. So for those who don't know, coaching change over the season.
Jay Gruden.
Jay Gruden is in now instead of the Shanahan clan. And actually, it was kind of funny because Kyle was across the sidelines last night. He and Grossman were both across the sidelines last night from the Redskin bench.
Were they giving signals to the Browns?
they didn't show enough of him, you know, when they showed him. They just kind of focused on, you know, he had been there last year and talked a little bit because I guess Grossman had only been acquired earlier in the week. You know, he was a relatively new pickup, so that was a little bit of new news. But, I think RG3 will get acclimated to what the new system is going to be, and I think he's healthy. I think he just needs to make better decisions. I think he tried to stay in the pocket. I think he's now making a pronounced effort to stay in the pocket longer because that was the knock on him coming out was – you know, as soon as the first option was there, boom, he just takes off and runs like a deer.
Absolutely.
And the thought now is if he's going to develop and become a first-rate NFL quarterback, he's got to go through his progression read. So I think hopefully we'll see more of that. But at the same time, hopefully with some of the other acquisitions we have on offense, he won't need to stay back there too long.
Well, you know, better pocket passer, that means that, you know, maybe the wide receiving crew gets addition of DeSean Jackson. So that crew now with Jackson, they still got Pierre Garçon. Santana Moss is still around because that guy just doesn't die, for crying out loud. How is the addition of Jackson going to either improve or cause problems for that wide receiving group?
Well, the first thing it's done is it actually wiped out the other free agent acquisition in that position. We had actually picked up Andre Roberts from the Cardinals before that news broke, and everyone thought, that's a nice little piece in the puzzle there to add him to the veteran core that you mentioned of Pierre Garçon, who had a career year last year, and also the venerable veteran Santana Moss, always good for third down catches. But when it came out that DeSean Jackson was not going to be retained by the Eagles, obviously that was big news because he was coming off a career year in his own right. And there was talks about his demeanor and his off-the-field issues and what have you. I found it interesting that one of the most vocal supporters among the Redskins for bringing him to Washington was D'Angelo Hall, and it didn't take a genius to figure out D. Hall's selfish motives there. He couldn't cover it when he was in Philadelphia. I mean, it was ridiculous how fast D-Jack just ran through our secondary. So I think if nothing else, D'Angelo figured if he had D-Jack on his team, he wouldn't have to worry about, you know, keeping up with him twice a year. So when I heard he was not going to be with the Eagles, my first thought was, I hope he goes to the AFC because I really don't want to have to contend with him. And then as it became news he was possibly going to land in D.C., I was intrigued by it. And to steal a hockey term, they refer to the locker room as the room, and you always want to have positive vibes in the room. So I think as long as he is going to be a good teammate and a good guy in the room, his upside is incredible. I mean, he hasn't really shown what he can fully do yet. He played in the first game of the preseason last night. He had tweaked an ankle, I believe, in practice prior to the first preseason game, so they held him out as a precaution. And I don't know how healed that is, and there was even some talk he might have tweaked a knee or an ankle last night. So I think he was probably used sparingly, but he certainly has the – we've seen with Philadelphia, he's got the speed to be a playmaker, and certainly I think he'll become a favorite target of RG3.
All right, what about the running backs? I mean, Alfred Morris, you know, he had a fumble yesterday where he couldn't handle a pitch from RG3. Is he ready to do it alone, or is one of the other guys like Royster or Helu or someone else in the backfield going to help?
They've got a lot of folks in camp, and I honestly, you know, the less I see of Alfred Morris in the preseason, the happier I am. I mean, he's sort of demonstrated what he can do, and I get he's got to be in there to get reps and to get ready and to learn the new system, and especially with the blocking that he'll be asked to do. But I really feel like he's proven, so I just – every time he's out there, I'm afraid he's one play away from being lost to us to injury. So I like to see him sparingly, but I certainly think he's going to be counted on. He's going to be the feature back. I think he's going to be the guy. But it's intriguing because the other backs they have in camp, so they've got Roy Helu, who has shown some very good signs, and they've got Evan Royster. And those two guys have both kind of come along at the same time. And it seems like if one is doing well, the other then they get hurt. Then the other one steps in, he does well, then he gets hurt. So I'd like to see them both be healthy, but it's going to be a crowded roster to try and claim these spots. There's a couple newcomers in the camp, Silas Redd, who out of USC, but prior to that was at Penn State. So he and Evan Royster actually have played on the same field before. And then the other back is C-Strunk, and I believe he's from Baylor, so he actually was there when RG3 was there, maybe freshman, senior kind of thing. So, you know, it's tough to look at guys like Red and C-Strunk because I don't know that they're really getting to play with the first-team guys and against the first-team defenses, so that's going to be more what they show in practice. But I certainly think there's a crowded group there, and then they'll keep Darrell Young as the only fullback. I don't think that they had a strong fullback presence in Cincinnati, so I'm not sure how Gruden's offense will work a fullback in. But he's a great blocker. He's tough after the catch. He catches the ball very well for a big fullback. So I certainly think he's going to be part of the mix. And I think between him and then they have a couple different options at tight end. They have some pass blocking tight ends like Logan Paulson. Then they have Jordan Reed, who kind of came on the scene last year. Before he got hurt, and he was showing that he was going to be very good enough, in fact, that they got rid of his name just fell out of my head, the tight end that we had last year. But, yeah, so I think they're loaded up. He should have a lot of options, RG3, and it's just a matter of how quickly they can be brought along and learn the scheme.
Well, you were talking about C-Strength, the sixth-round.
Fred Davis. That was the guy I was trying to remember.
Fred Davis. There was another problem with the Redskins this offseason where rookie fourth-round pick Bashaud Breeland got arrested for, was it marijuana, I believe, I want to say?
Yes, he was apparently on the VCU campus partying a little too hardy.
So, this is happening at a lot of places. Do we know has he been suspended?
I honestly don't know the nature of where that is right now. I'm not sure if that's an automatic suspension for a first offense or if it's an indefinite. I just know that I remember when that story came out a couple of weeks ago, the team was not happy because he was progressing well on the field. I think they had some plans for him to contribute, and I think they feel like that obviously set them back, even if he's not suspended for a lengthy, you know, if he's got two games, four games, whatever. It's more about just discipline. You know, you're drafted, you're trying to make a name in the league, you're trying to get a job, and to allow yourself to fall into that situation, certainly not what the team would have expected.
Yeah, all the Redskins said is they, you know, they're aware of the incident and they have no further comment. But obviously he's looked good on the field. It's just whether the league is going to step in. I don't know what their punishment is for a first-time offender. It's going to be interesting what they do there. But they've added other pieces to the puzzle, right, on the defensive side of the ball?
Yes.
The secondary?
I think secondary was probably the weak point, and I'm not so sure that that's not going to be the same again this year, to be honest with you. D'Angelo Hall is still probably the anchor back there, and he's shown flashes. He can be good at times. He can also be very undisciplined. Hopefully he's starting to get away from that, but he's a guy that every so often he'll get an extra 15-yarder because he'll commit the dumb play.
Hot hand Hall.
Yes. So he's still, though, when he comes to play, he's tough. And, you know, we don't have a secondary that really scares quarterbacks away. And I think part of the problem with that is that we've had a tough time getting home, getting to the quarterback of late. you know, right now, well, I think one of the biggest presences that we're going to have to overcome the loss of on defense is going to be the middle linebacker, London Fletcher. And London had lost a step last year. It was time. You know, London probably would have been better served to have retired after the end of the 2012 season. But he was that defensive captain. He was the coach on the field. So what he wasn't able to do, maybe having lost a step, he was able to be the calming influence, kept everybody in place. And I think that helped. And so most of the guys are returning. So we brought in Ryan Clark, I think, is the main difference. The main addition coming in from the Steelers. So on that defensive backfield, D'Angelo Hall's back. Brandon Merriweather, he's been in and out of, quote, you know, suspensions and injuries and things. If he's not injured, he's hurt. Or if he's not hurt, he's suspended kind of thing. Hopefully he learns not to lead with the helmet as much, and hopefully he can stay on the field more. David Amerson rounds out the crew on the defensive backfield. So Terry Riley, Keenan Robinson filling in the middle linebacker spots, I really think our outside linebackers in the 3-4 are really going to have good seasons. I think Ryan Kerrigan on one end and Brian Arakpo on the other. So front line of Bowen, Cofield, Hatcher, if Hatcher's able to play, which is a big question mark right now.
Kerrigan and Arakpo looked fantastic last night against the Browns. And my only concern is how long is Arakpo going to be or stay happy that they franchised him and they didn't give him a long-term contract?
This is true. And you know, there's something to be said for, again, the league has that rule at its disposal, and I think players aren't typically happy when it gets used sort of against them in this case. But maybe it motivates him. Maybe it makes him go out and play to demonstrate his value and his worth so that perhaps down the road it can lead to a bigger contract.
Well, you know I like Arakpo. He's a Texas guy, so I got to like
him. Oh, yeah, of course. He's a Longhorn guy, right?
Only problem is I got to tell Brian, don't flash Johnny Manziel the money sign.
The money sign.
After you sack.
Well, apparently, you know, apparently hand gestures were the theme of the game last night because I didn't notice it in real time, but I guess a couple of the Redskin DBs put the hands up gesture that sort of signifies unity with what's going on in Ferguson, right outside of St. Louis.
Yes.
I believe it's Illinois, actually. And then there was the money sign, and there was the finger by Manziel. So apparently it was a hand gesture night at the game.
That's what it was. All right, then finally, on the defensive side of the ball, you guys pillaged Jason Hatcher from the Dallas Cowboys, but he comes to you and he's hurt. How is that going to affect the crew there?
Well, obviously not having any opportunity to play before the opening game will be tough in terms of what he's able to pick up and go through reps and things of that nature. But he's a seasoned NFL veteran. You know, he's an interior lineman on the defensive side of the ball. So, you know, I don't think his learning curve is going to be terribly steep. I think he's going to be able to, you know, assuming he's healthy, and I think that's the big if he's ready to go week one, because the reports I'm hearing are he's being held out of preseason on the hopes he can go week one, and until we get to week one or until we get to whatever the day is that leads up to that first game when you have to, you know, declare your probables and your questionables, we're not going to really know the true nature. But both lines, the offensive line and defensive line, suffered significant injuries last year. So a lot of guys in the second and third slots on the depth chart had a chance to play significant minutes. So I feel like, you know, if Hatcher's not there, we go to Kedrick Golson. He started last year for a considerable amount of time. You know, looking at some of these guys on the line in the second, you know, Jarvis Jenkins, Chris Baker, Kedrick Golson are listed as, you know, the defensive ends left to right and the nose tackle. And they've all played considerable minutes. So I feel like there's a lot of depth up there. And hopefully it won't be an issue. Hopefully Hatcher will be ready to go. I'd like to see him out on the field and see what he can do. But I think they're deep, and they've got a lot of people that have been in these positions now for a couple of years. So hopefully now it's just a matter of picking up the new system from the new coaching staff.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be a Redskins conversation if I didn't bring this up. CBS has pretty much come out and said that they will let their announcers and their broadcasters decide whether they use the nickname Redskins during their game coverages. Jim Nance has said it's not my job to take a stance and that he will continue to use the name. But Phil Sims, who is his partner and color analyst, said his very first thought is he will use Washington for the entire game and not mention the other word. Tony Dungy of NBC has come out and he said that he will personally try not to use Redskins and refer to them as Washington. He also wanted it to be clear that it was his personal opinion and not anything brought on to him by the network. Other folks, Troy Aikman said, as long as their nickname is the Redskins, I will continue to call them the Redskins. And a couple other folks went on to say that, you know, they're going to use the nickname. Whatever the team is called, that's what they're going to call them, Boomer Esiason being one of them. So what do you think? I mean, I know I've given my take on the nickname. What do you think is going to happen with the Washington Redskins and their team nickname? And is Dan Snyder making any plans to change anything now that he doesn't have the patent on the trademark?
You know, Dan Snyder has been steadfast throughout this entire sort of ordeal or controversy, whatever you want to call it, that he will not change the name. And I know you and I have talked about this, you know, off the record, off the air, whatever you want to call it. And as I may be in the minority, I'm one of the few Redskin fans that wouldn't mind seeing the name changed. I'm not suggesting it has to necessarily happen, but if it did, I'm not going to be, you know, rioting in the streets because the name was changed. There's both sides to an argument, and I'm not of the demographic. I'm not of the demographic where the name would be offensive to me, but I like to be sensitive to the thoughts of those who might be, and that's my personal take. As far as him changing the name, I don't really see how that could happen, barring legal action that threatens the antitrust or any sort of legal action that could go against the Redskins. Against the NFL for the use of the word Redskins, because having lost the patent, that actually happened a few years ago. That happened, I think it was 25 years ago. This went to court, and a similar decision was made. And then I believe there was an appeals process, and then on appeal, the patent was restored. So this has been sort of an ongoing thing. It's really gathering steam now. I think we're in an era now of heightened political correctness that maybe we weren't in 10, 15, 30 years ago. So it's gaining momentum, and it's gaining momentum on the national level. You and I spoke briefly before we came on, and one of the other issues that I've read about this year is when the Redskins go to play Minnesota, because the Vikings are in the midst of having a new stadium built, they're playing their home games this year on the campus of the University of Minnesota. And that school has come out and said that they do not want the term Redskins mentioned at all in conjunction with that game. To mean no mention of that over the public address system, not printed in the game programs, not on the tickets. So I'm curious to see. I don't know that the Vikings have come out with any sort of formal statement about that, other than just to say we're aware of the University of Minnesota's, you know, comments, and we'll work with them. So I'm interested to see how that's going to play out. But there certainly is a heightened sense of awareness around the name. It seems like the more awareness that gets put into the name, the more controversy, the more discussion there is in the national media, the more Dan Snyder digs his heels in. And I think he's actually maybe misstepped in a couple areas. Earlier in the summer, they put out they dedicated a marketing campaign to why the name isn't offensive, and that kind of backfired. I think they got some negative. I think they tried a Twitter campaign, and that kind of backfired. So he hasn't made the right PR moves, I think, going forward in the handling of this. He's almost sort of becoming like the defiant, you know, cross his arms over his chest and dig his heels in. And of course, we all know Dan Snyder would never be like that. Of course, so maybe he's just showing his true colors with this fight, but. At the end of the day, he bought the team is his, so I don't know that there's any precedent to say you can compel an owner to make a change of the name. So unless something comes up that I'm not seeing, I really don't know how that would come about, but I don't foresee Snyder doing it, certainly of his own choosing.
Yeah, regarding that, it's the University of Minnesota. I'm not sure that the Vikings are collaborating with that process right now of the University of Minnesota saying they don't want the promotional materials and game data materials to say Redskins. They have a contract with the Vikings, and so it's up to the Vikings whether they go ahead and follow that. So I'm gonna keep an eye on that, because that's gonna be interesting. My take is with that kind of like of Troy Aikman. I'm like, as long as it's their name, and I am reporting on the National Football League, that is their name, and I'm gonna keep saying it. And I am not saying it to offend anyone, and I certainly understand how people could be offensive. I have many friends, especially back home in the state of Texas, friends who, you know, live in reservations and they're Native American, and they support the team. So I see both sides, and I'm kind of reluctant to say, go ahead and change it. I'm with you. If they change it, I'm not going to die. But right now, if it's not changed and you're reporting it, I don't understand how someone like Phil Sims, who played in the game, could, you know, and played against the Washington Redskins many times, being a New York Giant, how he could just say, you know, I'm just not going to say it anymore. And that's completely up to them. I personally don't believe CBS is doing right by their broadcasters. They should make a stance. I think Fox has pretty much come out and said that, you know, it is up to it is the name of the team, and, you know, our broadcasters can call it by the city, the nickname, both, and they're not forcing the issue on anyone. So it's interesting that CBS kind of did that. We're like, we're stepping away from it. we're not making a comment about it. It's up to the broadcasters, and kind of just throwing the broadcasters out there.
And I would say that's even happening to some degree in the local media. The local DC media have some. There are some anchors and some folks who cover the NFL beat that are doing the same thing. And you can even see it, you know, among the same network teams. You know, an anchor might refer to the name, but then when they go to the field reporter may go to great lengths not to use the name. So it's definitely an issue at home as well as, you know, on the national scene.
So that's being seen locally as well in the DC area.
Very much so.
Well, there you go. Ed, thank you very much.
I would just suggest that I think Cowboy fans don't necessarily want to see the name change because they like the alternative nickname of the Deadskins. If nothing else, I'd like to see him change a name so we can get away from those.
Yeah, there's a couple other really bad ones, too.
I wasn't going to go there, but I was thinking of those.
You
so
know
if
what?
If you change the name, it could be that we get away from that.
I was a big proponent of the Washington Crooked Politicians. But
okay, all right.
If the government gets in and forces Dan Snyder to change his name, that's what he should change it to. The Washington.
I like to point out, you know, a lot of people like to point the finger at D.C. and say that's where all the crooked politicians are. I like to remind everybody, but they came from other places. They came from your states.
That's right.
They just happened to work in D.C. They came from your states.
Well, Ed, lots of good information you gave us today. Really appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me on. If I could just real quick, I know the listeners in London getting geared up for 3 NFL games in London this year. I want to put out a quick shameless plug for my current employer. If you're in Dublin in a couple weeks, there'll be some good college football going on at Croke Park. So if you're inclined and you can't make it to London and you want to see some good American football at the college level, Penn State's playing the University of Central Florida at Croke Park in Dublin. I believe that's 2 weeks or a week from Saturday. So I think that's the 30th. So
awesome.
If you can't make it to London, you want to see some American football at the college level. I don't know if we're bringing the band and all that stuff, but it's certainly a good brand of football and a lot of excitement here around our new coach, James Franklin. So if you're in Ireland, you want to see some football, see if you can get in that game at Croke Park.
I like that. So are you going to that, Ed?
I'm not going to that. I work the home game, so when they're on the road, I put my feet up on the coffee table and watch from the enjoyment of my home.
Awesome.
We will on the East Coast, we will get the benefit of having an 8:30 kickoff, which you on the West Coast enjoy pretty much every week of the football season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because of the time zone difference, the game will kick off at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. So campus is trying to figure out a way to create listening or watching parties around breakfast and things of that nature. But
I like
everyone
that.
Here is pretty excited.
If you hear of anyone around the Penn State area needing someone to go and cover the game, I would more than happy to go to Dublin to be a part of that game.
I will look into that. I will see what I can come up with. I know that the plane that we're taking is pretty full already. But if I hear of any need for any stringers or anything like that, I'll certainly keep you in mind.
All right. Thanks a lot. That was Ed Franks, folks.
Thank you, Steve.
So there you have it. That is the NFC East. Cowboys be about the same, maybe a little better. Giants a little worse. Eagles about the same, maybe a little worse. Washington Redskins, I believe, and I guess I didn't let Ed tell me whether he thought they'd be better or not. Last year, the Washington Redskins were only a mere 3-13. They didn't even win 4 games last year. They were 3-13. I think they're a little bit better. I think a healthy RG3 makes them better, but he's got to get more comfortable in the pocket, and that still remains to be seen. And once again, defense. God, that's been the theme of this show and the NFC East, the defense of these four division rivals. It's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. And I'm going to be looking closely at all of the defense during this final preseason game, week three, I mean, there's still another one, but that week four doesn't even count in the preseason. Week three, let's look at the defenses of the four teams in the NFC East and see how they do. That's going to tell us a lot about how the season is going to progress for these teams. Okay, folks, once again, I'd like to thank Brandon Carr of the Dallas Cowboys for joining me. Week three of the preseason is here. Get out to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram and find our social media handles at www.nflrnr.com. Start following us there because we put some great content up there. Also, the interview with Brandon Carr from this interview will be up there as well. And once again, thank you to all of the fantasy football players that have signed up. Show donors, check your email. Thank you for donating to the show. I will have more good stuff, hopefully, throughout the season for you. And this spreadsheet given to us by James Reese will certainly be a good start for all you show donors that have been kind enough to donate to the show. I'm Steven Miranda, and I'm out.